KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. We're with Beverly Rich. She's a missionary with Called Christians Ministry in Jinja, Uganda. Bev, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. How are you?
I'm doing fairly well today, Jim. How about you guys on that end?
Well, we just got through Christmas weekend, and you know what a blessing it is to have this end of year time with you. We frequently, not as frequently as we need to, but we need to start talking with you more often, Bev, because you're doing some amazing things, but you also have some amazing needs as the ministry grows and expands. We're joined in studio also by Chip Lusco. Chip, how are you?
Doing great, Jim. Happy New Year almost.
Well, and I know that before we started today, Bev, Chip is a guy that wants to come out there and be in Jinja with you and lift you up and visit. And there's some restrictions and things going on. So we really need to talk about all of that today. Bev, would you spend a minute now and tell us about Called Christians and your mission in Uganda?
Sure. The mission was actually established in 1991 by Jay and Sonny McLaughlin. And then they were feeling kind of like I am right now, that they could really use some help. And so in 1998, Jess and I came out to work under Called Christians. At the time, Calvary Albuquerque was not a sending organization, but within just over a year, Calvary Albuquerque decided they wanted to send. And so we all switched officially to being missionaries out of Calvary Albuquerque, but our non-government organization is Called Christians. When we came out here, Jay had a church, and then he was teaching once a month in the prisons, one of the prisons here. Well, Jess and I got to visit the prisons when we came out with a school of ministry team in 1997, and it was very, very clear that God was calling us back here. So we came back actually to work in the prisons. The first week we were back here, we started teaching Bible in three different prisons. And then that was the main focus for quite some time. We now teach Bible in eight government prisons, but we do a lot of physical as well. We have a bus, a 29-passenger bus, that we take to the prisons each day and pick up the prisoners that are too sick to be treated in their infirmaries. We take them to the hospital, get their medication, take them back. We do a lot of other things for the prisons as well. We stock their pharmacies, and it's kind of a mutual, we will help each other society, because when they don't have prisoners that die, then the officers in charge look better. And so we're helping them look better, and then they allow us to teach in the prisons with no problem. Until every now and then you get a bad officer in charge, but right now we're doing pretty well. And then the men were coming out from the men's prisons and saying, come and start a village, a church in my village. There's no teaching like Calvary Chapel where we are. And Jesse would say, well, I'm just one man. I can't do that. I need to still be here in Jinja. But you come here and I will train you, and then you go start a church. And that's how our school of ministry got started. And so Jess taught school of ministry here for 17 years, I think, about 17 years before he passed away in 2014. And at the same time, there was a big abandoned building next door to us that had about 90 squatters living in it. They were widows with many children or street kids or whatever. And eventually, in 2004, we were able to buy that building. Well, even before then, we had started sending those kids to school, helping feed them, things like that. They have extended families, but none of them have, like, both parents. So we started taking care of those kids, oh, gosh, 1998, 1999. And then in 2004, when we bought the building, we needed to place the kids in place in different places with their extended families and still support them with food and medicine and clothes and school and those things. And those kids are now in their 30s and married and have kids of their own. And so I'm a grandma. And but it was very exciting. We never had an orphanage. People thought we were an orphanage. But we've raised probably 300 kids over the years. We try to get them through at least high school or even a trade school or university so that they can have something to do for their future. So that, because it's really hard to support a family here if you're not from some kind of wealthy family. So those kids often give back to me now. One of them is a clinical officer, and he comes and does medical outreaches with us. And he's building a clinic now that's the Jesse Memorial Clinic, which is kind of interesting. My accountant is one of the guys I raised up. Got two of my mechanics, you know. So we try and get kids through school. And at the same time then, the church used to be under called Christians. When Jess passed away, that had to change a bit because as a woman, I'm not supposed to be over the church, and I'm the chairman of the board of Called Christians. So they're a separate community-based organization now, but all along we've been, you know, intertwined. There's not really any separating us out. So we have a huge Sunday school with between 200 and 300 kids every week, and our church has about 250 to 300 people that come on Sundays in two different services. When the guys graduated from Jess's School of Ministry, they started churches in the villages. Those churches used to be under us as well, but again, I needed to deed over their land and their churches to the pastor and elders. And so we have 8 thriving churches out in the village. At one point there were more, but different things happened over the years. But they are thriving and growing and doing very, very well. And so those guys come for meetings here. And actually, when we have pastor conferences, which we used to do here every 3 months, we haven't had it for a while because we've been locked down for COVID for almost 2 years. But those guys that were trained up early and have their own village churches, they're the ones that plan and then teach the entire pastor conference here. I just provide the venue and the food for them. And so those guys have grown up. It's like watching our kids grow up in another way. And so then we have outreaches to, you would call them slum areas, underdeveloped areas, whatever. We have 3 different Bible studies that go out during the week. We go and teach women's Bible studies in 2 different villages that are within 30 miles of here. We have lots of children's ministries. So we just stay busy, busy, busy. I have 6 vehicles, and most of the time you can look out there and there may be one sitting in the parking area, and all the rest of them are out on ministry somewhere, which is pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Bev, there's a lot of expense to all the things that you just described. You're not charging the people in the village. You're providing all of these services. But we, people that are listening today, all of us here in America, we really need to come alongside you. And you mentioned early on, you need some help. How can we help you?
Well, the prisons, we spend about $2,000 a month on the prisons. Our fuel bill is just over $1,000 a month. We have a 2-acre compound where we have the Bible school, the church, the, you know, the ministries all go out from here. So of course there's water and electric and guard dogs and people to keep the grass mowed and, you know, all of those things. And then we feed, like during COVID, we have fed hundreds of people. So any funds that we get from anybody doesn't stay here. We're finally having to put a roof on the school of ministry building because it rotted off. But we very seldom spend money on the mission itself. We take care of people. And in doing that, you're the hands and feet of Christ, the voice of Christ. You reach out to them. They see, golly, this is different than these other places that claim to love you. And we draw them in with physical assistance. And then they hear the teaching of the word and people are just overwhelmed. And so that's, you know, and it takes funds to go out, like I said, over $1,000 a month just in fuel. And so, but all of our ministries take some kind of funding to go and do. We do crayons even for kids. I have to get my crayons from the U.S. because you can't buy them here. So just things like that.
Well, Bev, I want to just endorse the fact that you're the Energizer Bunny of missionaries. I mean, as our listeners can tell, it's a very deep and robust work you have going. And I want to just personally emphasize how fruitful it is. And I've seen firsthand, and I want to circle back and drill down on a couple of areas, but I want to say that you have fruit just growing abundantly from your labors over there, from Jay and Sonny and from Jess. And, you know, when we invest in spiritual endeavors, it's like buying stock. And you look for companies that are productive. You don't look for people that are about to go bankrupt. And Called Christians is just a good blue chip stock. It's got it's got two decades of history, and it's got just fantastic fruit at so many levels. So we've declared today to be Uganda Bev Rich Day here at KLYT. It's the end of the year. People are looking in some cases for tax deductible donations to make before midnight on the 31st. And we're encouraging them to consider Called Christians for a one-time and perhaps a continuing gift. It's very simple. Just go to calledchristians.org and look for the donate button, and you'll walk through it very, very promptly. But, Bev, let's circle back to the prisons. And I want to make sure our listeners have a vivid word picture in their mind. It's not what you see on TV in America. It's more like one of those horrible prison abroad shows where people have been busted for different things. And I went in with you, and, you know, it got my attention. I've been in prisons around different countries, but it was a very interesting. And the things you provide are that aren't given by the government are things as simple as rice or blankets.
Mm-hmm. Or we provide razor blades. That sounds funny to give into a prison, but that's how people shave their hair. And so we provide razor blades and actually soap, because if they have a bar of soap, they get it from their family. And most of the prisoners' families are afraid to visit. And so we provide just the basics like that as well, besides the medical. Just recently, one of the officers in charge left, and he stole all of the soap and all of the razor blades and all of the toilet paper and everything that we had given to one of the prisons. And the guy that took his place came after 2 weeks and said, "This place stinks. Can you help me?" So we bought many, many boxes of bathing soap, many, many jerry cans of liquid soap for scrubbing the floors, and then Jik, which is Clorox, so that they could clean the prison. And the prisons are just concrete block or cement floors. Our main prison was built for 400 men, and they have 1,600 men in there. And Remand Prison was built for about 400, and they have 2,000 men in there. They lie on the concrete floors. They have a little mat if their family brought them one, and they just lie side by side like firewood, you know. And that was one of the reasons for the big blanket donation at the end of last year. If the prisoners have a blanket, then they can cover themselves, and they don't have to huddle together and spread skin diseases and TB and everything else, but to actually have a blanket to wrap around yourself to sleep at night on a concrete floor when you have a pair of shorts and a shirt and that is all, and you're right on the lake shore, you know, just things like just the basics of life. They have two meals a day now. When we first came, it was one. It's ground maize meal called posho, and then they get like a handful of beans with a little juice to go on the posho. And that's what they eat day in and day out for as long as they're in the prison, except for Christmas Day, where we try to provide rice. We provide like 2,000 kilos of rice for about $3,000 just at Christmas. And then the prisons itself, the prison biggest guy, actually, when he got to be the commissioner general, he's a very strong Christian, and now he provides bulls for the prisons at Christmas. So they get beef from the prison and rice from us, the ones just that we teach in.
Well,
and so, yeah, and the basics.
I know you agree, Bev, that, you know, Jesus said one of the slam dunk things we can do is to visit prisoners. And when doing so, you're literally visiting him. And that's a startling statement, but it's true. And so you can't go wrong. And you do more than provide for physical needs. You provide spiritually. I recall being on the balcony and teaching with an interpreter and dozens of inmates crowding around. And there was joy even in that that environment for those who knew the Lord and took part in that service.
Yeah, they love when Calvary comes in to teach, too, because so many people come in there to teach, oh, if you get saved, you'll never have any more problems, you'll get out of prison, you'll get rich, da-da-da-da-da. And Calvary just comes in and just teaches the Word of God. And when you are at your lowest like that, you are ready, finally, to hear the Word of God. Other people are, too, but prisoners are very ready most of the time. And a lot of our pastors are actually former prisoners. And prisoners are all over Uganda, and when they see our Called Christians double cabin pickup truck anywhere in Uganda, some former prisoner will come running over saying, Pastor Jesse, Pastor Jesse, you know, because that truck is recognized everywhere.
Yeah, Bev, you've mentioned a couple things in the interview so far. You've talked about the orphans, and you've also talked about COVID. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk to you about both of those things and what's going on in the ministry as a result. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Welcome back to ABQ Connect. We're with missionary Beverly Rich. He is with Called Christians Ministry, and it's Called Christians Day at KLYT. Chip?
Well, we want to just boisterously endorse the work that Bev has done. We've seen it firsthand. We've watched it over the years, and we can't encourage people enough to make certain that she's not lacking in any support. And it's month to month, Bev, and you've had to put in personal funds. We've tried to, you know, buttress your support, and our people have responded, but we need to do more, frankly. And I hope people will consider, we don't ask for a lot. We don't push a lot of different causes. We try to be very judicious in those we do choose, and we're big believers in Called Christians in Bev Rich. So if folks will consider today or before the end of the year at the 31st at midnight of doing that one-time tax-deductible gift, you can go online right now at calledchristians.org. And I can tell you, whatever you give gets to the field.
I think you're going to have a good time just looking at the website. Bev does such a good job of providing monthly updates, mm-hmm. expressing the needs. She's already talked about the vehicles, and so many of them are being used so long every day, hours of every day in ministry. You need a mechanic. You need to do car repairs. Same thing in Uganda as it is here in the United States. So just think about as you listen ways that you might want to help Bev in what she has going on. Bev, we can't go very much farther without talking about COVID and how that's affected the ministry.
Oh, my. We know Uganda has been shut down almost completely since March of 2020. Our schools have been closed for the longest of anywhere in the world since March of 2020. And so we're going on, when we open again in January, we will have been closed for 22 months. Isn't that incredible? Mm. And so when that happened, you weren't allowed to meet with more than two people at a time. In fact, you couldn't even drive your own personal vehicle for the first 3 months of the first lockdown. And now even when you're in a vehicle, you're limited to half. Like in a regular car, you can have the driver and two people, and you have to have masks on. And there are police stops everywhere. So we couldn't go to any of the ministries in the village. The prisons have been shut down. They are finally letting us go in little by little, but only if our people are vaccinated. And just this past week, we've had our first real battle with COVID. I have 6 of my called Christian staff that are isolated at home with COVID right now, and 6 members from the church, and one more is going to test in the morning, one more of my staff. It must be this new Omicron, because their symptoms are pretty mild, but it has run through this compound like a freight train. And Uganda hasn't had nearly the numbers that so many countries have had. I was looking at the statistics yesterday. We've had 3,700 deaths, and for a while we were down to only 150 to 200 cases a day. Now we're back up to about 15 since the Omicron has come out. But everything shut down. There are still places that there is a 7 o'clock curfew in the evening. No one is allowed to be out past 7 p.m. So of course all the bars and everything secretly are open behind doors, and churches were closed down for 18 months and they opened for a brief period of about 2 months and then slammed back down again, just as we thought we were going to be doing our ministries again. So we found kind of undercover ways, I'm not going to say that very loud, to speak to people about the Lord. You know, some of the elders would do house to house, and they'd wear their masks and only see like 4 to 6 people at a time. And we couldn't travel to the villages, but we did our local ministries with just, we didn't meet together. We did like 4 in one house and then 4 in the next house. And so we've done our best to move on during this, but we're so glad because we've been opening our ministries again for the past 2 months. Almost everything is back in full swing, and that's really exciting. And the kids are going to go back to school in January, like I said, for the first time in 22 months, and we are gearing up to send from Called Christians 14 kids to either high school or trade school, and then we sponsor 31 full orphans at a local primary school. We pay their school fees, buy their uniform, and buy them porridge every day. So that's really what's going on right now between COVID and schools.
Mm. How are the kids themselves? Not being together in school, I mean, kind of like in the United States, it's probably similar. They need that companionship. They need to be with their friends.
Yes, they do. And about 30% of the teenage girls have gotten pregnant. Seriously. That many in Uganda. And so they're trying to make a new rule. When you've gotten pregnant, they've always just thrown you out of school. So they're trying to make facilitation right now where when the schools open again, because so many of the teenage girls are pregnant, they're trying to make arrangements where they can come to class during their pregnancy and then have some type of an arrangement even after they've had their babies, because it's devastating to, you know, to Uganda. All of these teen mothers with no fathers, and we've been really blessed. All my schoolboys are supposed to work on the compound on Saturdays and holidays, and that way they, you know, don't just feel so entitled. So, but we've just had an almost 2-year holiday. So all of my young men, they're in their teens and 20s and a couple of them in their early 30s, have been learning from a couple of my older guys, carpentry, masonry, how to keep a lawn, how to keep, you know, all kinds of different things. So if they don't finish school, or even if they do, they have something they can do for life to earn some money. But it's also kept them out of trouble.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, Bev, Called Christians has a full range of ministries, and you're to be commended for your faithfulness and your energy when you had to take over when your husband just passed away now 7 years ago. And that's been very challenging for you. But what I want to talk about right now is your hospital ministry. And give our listeners an idea of what the experience is for someone who is taken into a hospital in Uganda.
Well, the beds are there, but you take your own bed sheets. There's no pillows. The doctors come around once a day, kind of. The nurses don't do anything for you except deliver your medication or start IVs or things. You come with an attendant who brings your bed sheets and your clothes and soap and a basin to bathe in and all those things. And your attendant sleeps on a mat on the concrete floor beside you. and does everything for you, feeds you, bathes you, takes you to the toilet, you know, gives you your medicines, whatever. And if you don't have an attendant, they don't even, they let you just lie there and die. And it's so much better now than when we first came. It was just filthy in the hospitals. And sometimes it's not a lot better now, but, you know, but it's a bit better. But again, no attendant, no nothing. There aren't intensive care units in most places. There's no oxygen for people. And in fact, they don't do operations on sickle cell patients here at Jinja Main Hospital, or at least they didn't, because our electricity is so inconsistent, and a sickle cell patient needs to have oxygen the entire time they're under anesthesia, and they're always afraid that the power is just going to turn off. So for a long, long, long time, they didn't even do anything like that. And even this past year during COVID, when people needed oxygen, there was none. And so people ended up paying millions of shillings, which is thousands of dollars, just to get oxygen, and only special people did. You can lie in the bed for months if you can't come up with the money to bribe the doctor to do your operation if you need one, or if you can't bribe someone to give you medication or even to check on you every day. And when someone there dies, you need to sneak the body out of the hospital before they take it to the morgue, or then at the morgue you have to pay the morgue attendant to get your relative out, and it's a big hassle. And so the hospitals are here are really difficult. There are many people that don't have food. We fed the isolation, the COVID isolation unit, for a year because their families weren't allowed to come visit them. So we fed them out of Called Christians. One of the young men we raised up, actually two now, are social workers, and they work directly with the hospital. They find out who needs food, who needs medication, and we provide a lot of that. We also pay for ambulances to take them to Kampala if they need better help. Sometimes Aaron, during COVID, our social worker, he had a medical pass so that he could drive a car. And when people would get discharged, since no public transport or private transport was allowed to run, Aaron would take them back to their villages, just because otherwise they didn't have any way to get home when they got discharged. So it's a difficult place to be. I pray that I don't have to go in too many Ugandan hospitals before my time is up.
It almost sounds like the hospitals are worse than the prisons, Bev.
You used to go there just to die. They're improving, but you used to go there just to die. Yes.
And it sounds
we used to go.
Go ahead, Bev. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
We used to go to the children's hospital, and there were vultures out on the lawn just waiting. It was horrible.
Mm. Bev, as you expand that ministry, I mean, is your vision to bring doctors to faith and have them working in the ministry?
Ooh, I hadn't even thought about that. Now, there are many doctors that are believers. And in fact, there's one named Dr. Philip Banyama that is just a lifesaver. He's probably saved 20 people just out of Called Christians Calvary Jinja area. And then my young clinical officer that's setting up the Jesse Memorial Clinic. And so he shares the gospel with every one of his patients that comes in, which is amazing to me. But I hadn't thought about training up. Or at least, hey, okay, that's a good idea.
Well, you're already doing a lot of education. You're taking care of orphans. And I want to talk a little bit more about the children and some of the other ministries when we come back from this break. Bev, thanks for staying with us. We'll be right back with Beverly Rich, Called Christians Ministry in Jinja, Uganda.
From the KLYT Broadcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at snmacherdental.com. We're back with Beverly Rich. She is with Called Christians Ministry in Jinja, Uganda. She is one of the founders, has been there how long now, Bev?
Well, February will be 24 years, February the 5th.
After 24 years, Jinja's home.
Yes, it is. And so it's a third of my life, but that's giving away my age. So.
Bev, you mentioned that one of the byproducts, I hate to phrase it that way, of COVID has been that a lot of young women are getting pregnant. You've already talked about the numbers of orphans. Why so many children on their own in the country?
Well, it started with the AIDS epidemic back in the 80s and early 90s when Jess and I came, there were still no antiretrovirals here. And if you got AIDS, back then it wasn't even HIV. When you got HIV, you had AIDS, and then you died. And it's even called Slim's disease because of how the people would look as it progressed. And so a whole generation of people died off from HIV. And so then the grandparents ended up raising the children. Well, they'd already raised their own children, and now maybe they had 12 kids and six of them died of HIV. And so now they've got all their grandchildren, 18 to 20 some. You know, there was one lady in the building next door that had her own eight children, and then she had her sister's six children, and she had no job. And so that whole generation that now has the kids that are in their early 30s and late 20s, they just died out and the grandparents raised them. And so those are the kids that we started helping long ago, are the ones that just had no parents or only one parent or an auntie or something like that. And now I'm not sure what's going to happen with all these babies that are going to be born in the next year. Everyone is talking about it, but there are no solutions at this point.
Mm. Chip, you mentioned that you've been to Jinja, and you've witnessed firsthand all the work that's going on there. Why is that so important for people to think about maybe taking a short-term missions trip?
Well, we need to do a lot more than shake our heads when we hear the story Bev tells of the deprivation and the poverty and the suffering in the prisons and the hospitals and in the streets of a place like Jinja. And we need to, as I say, first of all, come alongside financially, where we're coming from a place of prosperity and we have the ability to meet that need. So we're encouraging today, as we frequently do about Called Christian, to make a one-time gift. I hope our listeners will take this seriously and make that investment. And, I mean, you're investing in something that God is clearly authorized and anointed and blessed, but given us the opportunity to co-partner with him. And it's unacceptable to me that Bev has to struggle financially. It really is, when the work is so clearly productive and we have an easy opportunity to give. So I'm asking our listeners to go to calledchristians.org today, or in the next couple of days, certainly by the end of the year, to take advantage of the tax-deductible status of a gift to Called Christians, calledchristians.org. But when it comes to taking a short-term mission trip or a long-term mission trip, Jim, I think it's really an important discussion to have, because right now people are going, well, we don't dare travel. We can't go here or go there. It might put us in jeopardy. And I've been giving that a lot of thought. We've had, I think, 2 years now of trips canceled to Uganda, to other places we had planned, to Macedonia. And I've had people tell me, well, just stay in New Mexico, stay in the States, lots of ministry here. And that's true, but that's only a one quarter of the commission, because the Bible says go into Jerusalem, which is our New Mexico, our Albuquerque, Judea, which is really our regional Rockies, Samaria, which is really the United States, and then the uttermost parts of the earth. So it's not enough to go, I'm just going to minister in the States because it's more comfortable here. And the point being, as we discussed beforehand, I'd love Bev's thoughts on these. In John 17:18, Jesus said, as you sent me, Father, I send them. So we need to contemplate, how was Jesus sent? Well, he ran into a burning house. If he waited for things to be safe on earth, he never would have come here. And if he waited to be vaccinated, he'd never come back. So we have to consider, Paul went into Ephesus and Philippi and to places that didn't welcome him, where it wasn't safe, and he suffered greatly because of it. So are we going to wait to go on missions? And I don't think it's enough, and Bev, I really want to hear from you, it's enough just to give, just to pray, just to support. Those are all valid and important, but the Great Commission has a strong verb in it, and that verb is go.
Well, that's true, and not so many people want to go these days, not just because of COVID, but, and I don't want to be mean, but like you said, a lot of people have very comfortable lives. They don't want to give up what there is there to go and see the other side of the world. And the main thing is we're shy about sharing our faith. But there are so many people that are going to end up in hell because they don't hear the gospel. They don't hear the truth. One of the things here is the prosperity gospel and how Jesus died basically to give you stuff. But that's so wrong. And then people, when they don't get stuff, turn away from what they think is Jesus. And then we get to come along and teach them who the real Jesus is and see heaven grow and grow and grow. And when you come from the U.S. and you come and experience that here, people are so eager to hear the gospel. They want to hear the truth because they so seldom hear the truth. And it will change your entire life. I don't know anyone that's ever come here that something in them has not changed. So you come for the benefit of the Ugandans, to bring them to Christ, to bring them the good news, but it also changes something deep within every person that comes here, unless you're just callous already. It's amazing. But, I just can't tell you what it feels like to look at people and share the gospel, even if you do it through a translator, to share the gospel and see their faces change and their hands come up and running forward and ululating with joy when they realize that they're going to end up in heaven with Jesus, that Jesus died for their sins. That's such a different concept here sometimes. Anyone that comes, of course, is a help to the missionary. Sometimes we begin to feel like we're a bit stale. And then you get these enthusiastic, wonderful groups from the West, and they come out and they see things with different eyes, and they love the people. And so that helps lift our hearts up, too. And just for people to see the things that are going on here makes a difference. They pray for you more. And goodness, we need prayer. And you mentioned, too, about the safe place. You know, one of the things that people have always said to me is the safest place to be is in the center of God's will. No, it isn't. It is not safe. I mean, I looked down the wrong end of an AK-47 as a guy shot at me. It is not safe. And I just finished malaria 2 weeks ago, and it was miserable. But even if it's not safe, being in the center of God's will is the most wonderful place you can possibly ever be.
I agree, Bev, of course. And we need to define our terms here, Jim, because people may think, well, I do missions here, you know, in my hometown. And I have a friend who wrote a book called When Everything is Missions, Nothing is Missions. Mm. And the point being that there is a distinction to be made between local outreach and global missions. Mm. And they're dramatically different. And we may think, well, my missions is my softball team. Well, that's local outreach, but you need to draw really a line between what we do locally and what happens internationally. As you say, Bev, when you go in the mission field, as I have done and many times, first of all, there's an impact to support the local missionary as you are encouraged when people come over there. There is the impact of what you do in going out to visit, but you come back changed yourself. It changes you. And I made certain my children all had that exposure. They didn't think all the world was, you know, Cottonwood Mall. Mm. And so I think we want to, and there may be people listening, Bev, who are interested in perhaps not a short-term, but a long-term investment in Uganda.
Well, if God is calling you, he called Jess and I so clearly, there was no doubt. And in fact, that's why I'm still here. Jess may have passed on, but he has not released me from my call yet. And so if people feel God calling their hearts to go into missions, go talk to one of the pastors, go talk to the elders, talk to your friends and see if they think you're called to missions. But go. There's nothing more rewarding than doing what God calls you to do. And you know, of course, here I'm getting a bit older and I'm on my own a lot. I have a wonderful staff, but, you know, it would be so great to have a couple, say, maybe in their 40s to come out and train and learn this place and then end up taking over. You know, if God's tugging on your heartstrings to go, then just go. It's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Beverly Rich. She's with Called Christians Ministry in Jinja, Uganda. When we come back, Bev, you just mentioned your team, and I hadn't even thought about asking you about the people helping you. So when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about your team and the people that you have working in ministry with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Called Christians Ministry is an amazing group of individuals in Jinja, Uganda. They had been sent out, Beverly Rich and her husband Jess, who has passed away, but Bev has stayed the course and still ministering, and it's an amazing ministry. We want to encourage our listeners to go to calledchristians.org. Find out about the ministry. Look at Bev's frequent updates about what's going on in the ministry. She has all kinds of people that are helping her. Tell us about your team a little bit, Bev.
Well, we used to have a pretty good big team of what we call Bazungu Westerners, but now we're down to me and then Ann Wibbenmeyer. I've known Ann since she was 9. Her dad and Jesse were on the elder board together up in Leadville, Colorado, and they were always our base when we went back to the U.S. and we went out from there. And so Ann came almost 5 years ago now to work with us, and she this year has just come into her calling. She has kept our young girls from the church safe. She's had Bible studies with them every afternoon for 2 years now. She is doing a Bible school for our pastors' wives and training them up. And now she's starting a Bible school for one group of village ladies that have been doing Bible study for a long time. So Anne is just a real blessing. And then Deborah Roberts was out to take my place when I was in the U.S. on furlough last year. And then she got stuck here with COVID and stayed for almost a year. And then she went back and promptly got cerebral malaria and ended up for a month in intensive care and tried to die on us. But she miraculously, the doctor said it was a pure miracle. She has recovered quite a bit and is hoping to come back out in May. And she's got so many administrative gifts. Isaac and Clea Wooten were working with us for a long time, but they have moved on to an incredible ministry just a couple hours away from here and get to teach the Bible to hundreds every week. So we miss them, but they're doing such a great job. And then the rest of the people here are Ugandans. Our prison's pastor is Ugandan. Our prison women teachers are Ugandan. The people that go to the village, the pastor of the church and his worship leader. So, and we're all just working together so well right now, and there's so much peace on the compound, and it doesn't always go that way, you know, but every ministry leader now, except for Anne, is a Ugandan that's been trained up from here. And then the person that helps me run the office is Nimeri. She's my Ugandan daughter. She's not adopted, but she's the daughter of my heart. And she's learning to take over. She, in fact, does most of the office for me now. And we all just work together so well. It's amazing. I love it.
Bev, just a sideline, are you speaking Ugandan now?
No, I can greet and I can do things like tell children to sit down and be quiet and play nice and, you know, things like that. And greeting is the very, very most important thing here. If you don't greet, you are evil, you know. So that's been real hard on Ugandans, by the way, too, because you have to shake hands and yet we're not allowed to touch each other. So that's been real difficult. But no, I don't speak much Luganda. I wish I did. That's my biggest regret, I think, in 23, almost 24 years of being here. And I've tried to learn at times, and I just get so busy that I just don't take the time to study. So shame on me.
Well, Bev, we do want to invite our listeners, if they're interested, to visit you over there and support you, to give them an idea of what they find. The Called Christian Campus is a number of acres. It's very clean, very secure, very sanitary. The people are remarkably friendly. And you've built a very, as I say, robust ministry. There's a church on the site, a school, and you do so very much. And as they can tell, you're just so perky and energetic, and we appreciate you. Now, before the lockdown happened, we had a trip planned. We had a team put together, and I was so excited about it, going into the villages and setting up a tent and doing ministry and doing conferences. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty determined to make that happen in the coming year. Will that be possible as you see it from this point?
I can hardly wait for you guys to be here. And then, of course, we'll start all over and work with the villages and get ready for you to go give conferences there and teach in the prisons and things. But, you know, it's difficult for traveling. I have a feeling that pretty soon you're not even going to be allowed to fly without your vaccination certificate.
Yeah.
But so far, you're not required to be vaccinated. But the minute you land in Entebbe, they take a COVID test right then, and you have to pay for it. It's about $30. And then if you're vaccinated, they let you just go on where you're going, and then they'll let you know your results. If you're not vaccinated, you have to wait there for about 4 hours to wait and get your 4 to 6 hours to get your results, and then you can go. And so it's much better than it was when they were shutting you in a hotel room for 2 weeks and not letting you travel anywhere.
Well, it's a historic place to go, Uganda. I mean, the history with Idi Amin, Entebbe with the tremendous story of the Israeli hostages. And then you are right on the banks of Lake Victoria, the largest freshwater lake in that part of the world. And literally the head end of the Nile River bubbles up, which is an amazing thing to see, right in the middle of Lake Victoria. So people will really have the opportunity to have an interesting trip at so many levels. And as I say, Bev, I'm determined to make it happen in 2022. Jim, give us a final encouragement for support this year.
Well, we want everybody, if you can, go right now to calledchristians.org. Take a look at the website. Look at Bev's updates. And I just think it's going to be so important for you to think about how you could be a missionary in providing support to Bev and her team. And then go that second step, which is thinking about making a trip to Uganda.
We want to drag Jim along, Bev, and have him do a basketball, basketball camp.
Oh, and let me tell you something. Basketball is not quite as popular as soccer, but I'll tell you what, there's some Ugandans that can flat play, and I'd love to come out there and do that. I love to play with kids, Chip, and my heart is really for the orphans of that country and even the parents. As a father of five, I knew it was hard to raise children in America, much less in Uganda. Bev, again, one more time, Called Christians Ministry, calledchristians.org. And we're just so glad that you joined us today. It's always amazing to me when I speak to somebody like Bev Rich, who's called to go into a place that you wouldn't consider really to be comfortable. And you're ministering to prisoners, and you're ministering to orphans, and you're talking with people, parents that don't know where their next meal's coming from. Called Christians Ministry is an amazing ministry. It's something that has been in place now for almost 24 years. Bev has been serving faithfully. And again, I get to, not a criticism, I think there's a need for us to go to Honolulu and have churches in Honolulu. But that's a different thing than being in Jinja, Uganda. And so many needs. You might be a doctor. You might be near the end of your medical career. Maybe you could go and share the gospel and help with some of the medical outreach that Bev is doing. Maybe you're somebody that enjoys contracting and building. Bev could really use your services. Maybe you're an auto mechanic. Again,
trying to give people some ideas about why you might want to travel and be a long-term missionary in a country like Jinja and being part of the Called Christians Ministry. Thank you so much for listening today. It is Bev Rich, Called Christians Ministry in Jinja, Uganda today here on KLYT, and we're just blessed to be part of their ministry and be able to bring the message of what they're sending, the message of Jesus Christ, and not just talking about him, but daily living it out and blessing people with food and medical attention and education and all the things that go into it. Thanks so much to Chip Lusko and Beveridge for joining us today. Thanks for joining us.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.